What's up, everybody? It is bonus time. Yes, I give you a bonus show. When you support the show, I give you a bonus show every month. Today, we're going to go deep. We talked to special guest William Ramsey, and he told us all about the Order of the Nine Angles, an occult, satanic, sacrificing, killing group. A global network, the Global Death Cult. Well, I bought their book. It's called Infernal Geometry and the Left-Hand Path, the Magical System of the Nine Angles. And as my bonus show to you, I am going to go through this book, through all the notes that I've got on this book. And you might be asking, well, Isaac, where's the video, homeboy? Today we're not doing a video. That's what's up. And here, and I got a good reason why. It's because I'm going to have to pause this a lot. Because it's a big old book and I got lots of notes. But I got to kind of pause it and formulate the thoughts behind the scenes. So that's why I'm not doing a video. And because you don't want to see all that. You don't want to see all of it. You're going to be bored to tears. Because to be honest, it's like a pretty boring book. So it's going to be a pretty boring show. You know it's not. I'm just kidding. You know it's going to be a good show because I'm going to try to make this entertaining. How can I make satanic magical orders entertaining? I'm sure there's going to be a couple Borat jokes, a couple penis jokes. I don't know. We'll see what happens. So yeah, this is a book. I'm going to talk about the book, and then we're just going to go through it sequentially in case you don't want to read it. I don't recommend it. It's a very boring read like some of these books are. William Ramsey's book is much better, much more entertaining than this one. This is written by Toby Chappell. And no offense to Toby Chappell, but, you know, these magic nerds, they're into magic. And it's, you know, I think it's interesting, but I don't get into the nuts and bolts of it. And that's probably half of the book is like getting in deep into the nuts and bolts of it. Toby Chappell wrote this book, Infernal Geometry and the Left-Hand Path, the Magical System of the Nine Angles. And what they're talking about, we're going to talk a lot about this infernal geometry. Because the angles, the nine angles, is in fact referring to geometric shapes. And when they talk about left-hand path, this is a subject we've talked about many times. You've got a left-hand path and you got a right-hand path. And the right-hand path is your traditional sort of religious idea of conforming to the rules that God has given us so that one day you can be absorbed into the divine, absorbed into heaven, into God himself or herself. We don't know. They self into God. The left-hand pathers, they reject that. They want full separation from that stream of consciousness. Because they believe they can become gods in their own right. Man can become God through magic, creating his own reality. Now, shout out the Occult Rejects. They were on Tinfoil Hat and I checked them out. I liked what I heard. And ironically, they had Ramsey on their show just a couple weeks before I posted mine. I had mine in the can since, I think, October. But then the Travis Scott thing happened, and I had to keep pushing it out, pushing it back. So I did listen to that show, most of it at least. And Ramsey talked about some interesting stuff on there that I don't recall we covered on our show. He talked about Genesis P. Oridge, how they influenced a lot of these groups. Genesis P. Oridge, of course, pronouns are they, them. Genesis, dare I say, a friend of mine through the internet. We got along just fine. Me and old Genesis there before they passed on. Genesis goes by the pronoun they, them, because Genesis believes when he, you know, Genesis was a dude married to Lady J. She died. They were in this process of surgically making themselves both the same, you know, appearance. And he more or less said, okay, Lady J's dead, but she's now part of me. I am now they. But we had a lot of good conversation on email before Genesis passed away. Someday I want to talk about those emails. Just not sure when is. Anyway, Genesis, very much an occultist. Very much into the magic. If you read Genesis' book, The Psychic Bible, I think, is that what it's called? The Psychic Bible, yeah. The Psychic Bible. You can read all about the different networks they set up around the globe, which is going to ring very true with this Order of Nine Angles. It's a very similar setup. One more point from the Occult Rejects episode I do want to discuss, and we're going to cover this later. The main difference between satanic ritual groups and the Order of Nine Angles is calling, that is, human sacrifice. And they call it calling, C-U-L-L-I-N-G, because that's a term in husbandry. You know, you're taking care of the animals. Sometimes you got to sacrifice those animals that are needed. This is like in that film Midsummer, if you've seen that. Once you hit a certain age, you're jumping off the cliff. If you jump off that cliff and you don't die, you get the sledge-o-matic. You get Gallagher'd right there on the rock. But they're, and the Order of Nine Angles, very much a dark, black magic kind of group. They're down for any kind of religious conflict, wars, etc. Any kind of conflict is good because it's calling, it's killing off, it's weeding out the mundane, leaving the Satanist. Now, what happens when you got a Satanist in the army? Isn't that a bit of redundant? I don't know. Not redundant. Isn't that counterproductive? Which brings us to the beginning of the book, The Foreword by Michael Aquino, called The Four Weird, because they know they're weird. And I'm just going to read to you the highlights. And that's why I got to pause, because I got to like open the book to the right page. You know what I'm saying? So Michael Aquino, of course, founder of the Temple of Set, hanging out with Anton LaVey, both buddies and all this satanic magic nonsense. He's talking about the ancient Egyptians, because every single group always goes back to this, goes back to alchemy and the ancient Egyptians, who were taught by Hermes Trismegistus, right? He says, and I quote, "Priesthoods and later scientists are entrusted with the task of understanding the Neturu and devising optimal human cooperation with them. That is nature." Comes from nature. Because they worship these gods, right? So it says, okay, these phenomena recurred with inevitable regularity. Talking about how they worship the Nile and, they worship nature for giving them what they had in ancient Egypt. Because you got to go back to the beginning of agricultural times, and the Nile River would provide the fertile soil for them to plant the crops so that they could have life. So they worship nature and the sun. Nature is the netter. And the gods were the Neturu. So what he's saying is that a lot of the, back then in that culture, the priest and the scientist were kind of the rock stars of the culture, right? And they were the ones who had to understand how to make communication with the gods, because the humans were too stupid. Which sounds very similar to where we're at today, does it not? So the takeaway here is that Neter, nature, was first examined by these Egyptians. They wanted to understand it. They wanted to find harmony with it to survive. They conducted interactions with the natural world through magic, which is where your science is rooted in. Science is rooted in alchemy. They were some of the first cultures to use the numbers pi and phi, you know, pi, 3.14 and 1.78, half a pi, pi. they use those numbers to discover some of these natural laws that we use to this day. And the mystery school priests, the scientists, the occultists, whatever you want to call these people, who I argue are still around to this day, they're just lying in wait. They were tasked to understand this God of nature. That was their whole thing, right? And then he talks a little bit about the power of the mind, and that is always where this comes to. That's where the intelligence agencies, the occultists, the scientists, they all want to understand the power of the mind so they can brainwash and manipulate people. Aquino said, "One's mind and brain are accustomed to function amid rigid, reassuring regularity. Knock this skeleton away, and the result is absolutely independent, unconstrained creative power, which the pedantic might mistake for insanity." I told you this was a boring book. So what's he saying here? It's the same thing I've been saying that I talked about in The Dark Path. At least I believe so, right? That artists who channel creativity need to shatter the rules and break the social construct, the social norm, to get into contact with something new. And he goes through some good examples, talk about like how nature doesn't make a Ferrari sports car, right? You don't just find those out in the woods. If you do see those out in the woods, you let me know where it's at. But nature does produce the components that you need to put together to create a Ferrari. So man needs to worship nature and understand that nature gives him the things he needs to create the world around him. All right? So Michael Aquino's done. He's out of here. We're moving on to the next section, the prelude. Weird Tales, Semiotics, Geometry, and the Left-Hand Path. And they talk a little bit about how the book's going to be full of these black magic topics, particular rituals. And they talk about a couple of rituals of note. It says, "The other two rituals, the Ceremony of the Nine Angles and the Call to Cthulhu, are directly influenced by the writings of H.P. Lovecraft, and both make use of an elaborate magical language inspired by the scant phrases of the language of the Great Old Ones, dubbed Ugothic, in Lovecraft's works. These rituals were not, in fact, written by LaVey, but were contributions from Michael Aquino, who was LaVey's left-hand man in the Church of Satan at that time." So it must have been a big deal to have Aquino write the foreword, right? And it talks about how the Book of Satanic Rituals that LaVey published actually included some of these H.P. Lovecraft ideas, which influenced this new group, the Order of the Nine Angles. But it makes the clarification that these rituals were created by Michael Aquino, not Anton LaVey. Who cares, right? These guys care. That's who cares. Then it talks about what the Nine Angles is. This gives you sort of the umbrella view of what this whole book is about. It says, "The Nine Angles, referred to in their eponymous ceremony, are visualized as an inverse pentagram superimposed on a trapezoid, the nethermost point of the pentagram extending beyond the lower horizontal of the trapezoid, with the upper points of both figures coinciding. Since a regular pentagram embodies the golden ratio..." That's your fee, right? The golden ratio. A lot of truthers will talk about the power of the numbers, and it comes from, again, you got to look at the historical context of all this. How the early occultists and alchemists were the ones coming up with these mathematical laws, because they were really focused on trying to understand the gods, trying to understand the creator, so that they could become the new god. Okay, and so that's why a lot of this geometry and numerology kind of stuff fits into all this. So, what are we talking about here? "Since a regular pentagram embodies the golden ratio, and the connected trapezoid is drawn in proportions derived from the distance between the two upright points of the pentagram, the combined figure is predominantly composed of the segments divided into the golden ratio. As such, the angles function as a type of sacred, or perhaps more accurately, infernal geometry that provides a symbolic and practical Oh, hang on a second. Practical model of transforming the self through carefully measured introspection and action. Infernal, of course, a term used to denote hell. You've made it to your destination, hell. Okay, so that's what the nine angles is. It's talking about this pentagram trapezoidal shape, and they show it in the book. It's, you know, it's basically picture an inverted pentagram or like a star upside down, right? And by the way, if I was in the military station in the South for a while, and you know, me being a Yankee from up in PA, I'd never seen a Confederate flag. I mean, I'd seen a Confederate flag, but like, people didn't drive around with them. Like, it wasn't a big deal. And then when I got stationed down in Florida on the Panhandle, I said, holy crap, these people take it serious down here. This is in 2002. Different time. And I remember one of the other old Yankees, we were talking about how weird Florida was. We were talking about this Confederate flag obsession they had. And he was like, yeah, you'll notice a lot of these people, they actually put their license plates on or their flags. They'll have them upside down. And you'll know it's upside down because the stars on it will be inverted. Just something fun we like to do to feel superior and make fun of people, you know? Oh, dear. So anyway, so it's an inverted, it's an upside down star. And around it is a trapezoid, which is kind of like a rectangle with a skinnier top than bottom. I don't know how to describe that. But the apex of that inverted star is actually outside of the trapezoid, and I believe they talk about that later. So the nine angles they're talking about, it refers to that pentagram and the trapezoid. And the pentagram is, of course, using the sacred geometry, the golden ratio of phi, half of pi, or p, and symbolic of the candidate transforming themselves through carefully planned action, through the introspection. Because a lot of this occult stuff is very deep. It's very heavy. I mean, these aren't idiots. I've never once said they were idiots or that this stuff doesn't work. I don't know if it works or not. I tend to believe it does. You know, if you want to believe in Faustian bargain stuff and all that, which I do, I mean, do I know for fact, scientifically proven, that this stuff works? No, how would I know? I'm certainly not going to try it just to see. It's like when we went to, when me and Josie from Breaking Social Norms podcast, when we went to the Haunted Museum, Zach Bagans Haunted Museum, we paid to get the pass that got us in all the extra rooms. And we went into one extra room and then never went into another one. Because we believe this stuff, right? They had this whole thing about the basement. There was he put the mirrored Bela Lugosi's mirror in the basement where they were doing satanic rituals. And they had closed it down to the public for a long time because a bunch of weird stuff happened. And the lady was like, okay, if you got the extra, you know, VIP passes, you can go down and take a look in the mirror where people have notoriously looked into that mirror and had car accidents or deaths or weird stuff happen. And me and Josie looked at each other like, no thanks. But several people went down there and I was like, well, okay. You apparently don't watch enough Ghost Adventures. I believe this stuff. So then they talk a lot about, oh boy, like symbolism of it all. And it talks about how the people participate in the ritual. They'll give you the verbatim language, this weird H.P. Lovecraft, Gothic language. And they talk about some of the symbols within it, like the sign of the horn, you know, the Manor Cornuto, or the rock and roll devil horns, whatever you want to call it. And they flat out pay homage to the gods of H.P. Lovecraft, which you can hear in the film with Dean Stockwell. What the hell is it called? You know what I'm talking about. Dunwich Horror. We did a whole show on it a long time ago. On the Patreon VIP, check it out. That might have been a bonus show too, by the way. So, anyway, they go through, I mean, it's a pretty extensive, like, script of what they're talking about and what they're doing, who they're hailing. They're hailing the gods. Pretty boring section. But anyway, then we get to, it's more of a script for, like, if you wanted to do this at home, I guess. I don't know why you would. But then we get into chapter one, finally. Overview of the nine angles. And it explains the origin of the group. It says, multiple threads of esoteric thought came together in the ceremony. The number mysticism of Pythagoras plays an important role, as do Anton LaVey's ideas on the metaphysical significance of the oblique, meaning non-right, meaning not 90 degrees, not perpendicular, for you math nerds out there. I'm a math nerd. Hey, you know what? It's fine. Okay, so talking about the angles and architecture and art. The mathematical properties of the number 9 and the mystical significance of this in LaVey's thought find a practical application and Aquino's interest in the intellectual and magical implications of artificial language construction also figure prominently. All of this presented through the aesthetics of the writing of Howard Phillips Lovecraft. What is he saying here? Let me help you. Did you fall asleep? He talks about Pythagoras, of course, the original cult leader, the original secret society guru. He did the Aleister Crowley thing before Aleister Crowley did it. And talks about the powers of mathematics and sacred geometry and how they use the H.P. Lovecraft language. We talk about this many times, how in like chaos magic, for instance, you can focus on fictional characters. Or even fictional books like the Necronomicon. And it doesn't matter because everything's all created in our minds. It doesn't matter if it's real or not. You make it real. When I say choose your own reality, it's what I'm saying. When I write the alien books, say use your illusion, that's what I'm saying. And there's a certain aesthetic that comes with H.P. Lovecraft. It's very dark. And I've tried reading it. It's very difficult to read. Almost as difficult to read as this book's sections where they go into the magical ceremonies and stuff, but it has a certain vibe to it, and that's what a lot of these rituals are all about for the ceremonial magicians. They're trying to create a sort of theater of drama. That's why Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan doesn't, they say they don't worship Satan, but they employ the imagery, the archetypes of Satan. And to me, if I'm Satan, I'm cool with that. I'm like, yeah, bro. Sounds good to me. You don't have to believe in me. Make me look appealing. Make me look bad and edgy. And people out there that get satanic tattoos and stuff, and they're like, well, I don't believe in none of this. I'm an atheist. I'm like, well, okay. You just pledged your allegiance a little bit there, though, right? Don't you want to at least hedge your bets? Because that's kind of where I go sometimes. Like, sometimes I think about organized religion. I'm like, this is nonsense. What are we doing here? What a crazy story. It's a crazy story. But, you know, when you're born and bred into it, it's I can't dismiss it. So in some ways, I'm always like, at worst, in my most atheist or agnostic mood, I'll still be like, you know what, though? I'm hedging my bets. Let me pay my tithing. You know what I mean? What do you got to lose? Which is a very shitty attitude to have. I do not advocate for that. I just wish, man. Like, I wish I had that. You know, some Christians, they got that fervent. They know it. They know it. They're like, Jesus talks to me, man. I'm like, bro, give me the number. I got it. I want to know. And for me, the one thing that keeps me strong in my faith, if you want to call it strength, I don't know, but as weak as it gets, is the blessings that I get in my life in so many ways. I am so blessed in so many ways, and I don't know who to thank for that. Like, sure, I worked hard, went through 8 years of college, whatever, right? But like, there's lots of people that do that, and they don't have the blessings. Why me? Why am I blessed to have such a beautiful audience listening to me? I don't understand it. It's very weird. So, you know, all praises be to God is what it turns out to be. Where were we here? Should I just go full evangelical on you on that as? Sorry, I'm distracted. My neighbor's playing with the dog. You know what? This climate change thing, it's December. I got the window open. It's sunny. Shirt off, tits out for the boys. It's beautiful. I'm okay with this climate change. I don't have kids. What do I care? Just kidding. I kid. All right. But you know, that's a big next conspiracy topic. I got to get into the climate change. Got to do it. But we're not talking about climate change. We're talking about Satan and magic. Okay, so he's talking about the different rituals. The ceremony of the Nine Angles has a companion ritual called the Call of Cthulhu, of course, referencing H.P. Lovecraft. So, very clear connection of H.P. Lovecraft and the Order of Nine Angles. If you read Kenneth Grant's book, The Dark Lord, you'll see the same connection being made. The same connections being made. If anyone has Peter LaVenda's email or phone number, you gotta let me talk to him. I'm trying to interview this guy. And, you know, I don't interview too many people. I'll have, like, the same five guests every year. I don't care. Because they're people I like and I trust and I've built a relationship with. I don't know. I don't let too many people in there. You know what I'm saying? Peter LaVenna, that's the guy I can't get. Okay, so then he talks about, it's clear from LaVey's writings on the law. It's called the Law of the Trapezoid, okay? Okay, let me back up. So Anton LaVey also had the Order of the Trapezoid. That's where this trapezoid symbolism comes into play with the Order of Nine Angles. And he says, all obtuse angles are magically harmful to those unaware of this property. The same angles are beneficial, stimulating, and energizing to those who are magically sensitive to them. Because a trapezoid has no right angles, no 90-degree angles. Says that the trapezoid is the only convex polygon in its standard forms that contains both types of oblique angles, acute and obtuse. Acute meaning less than 90 degrees, obtuse meaning more than 90 degrees. I think. I'm going back. I'm going deep into my math brain of college. I'm pretty sure that's accurate. Rendering the trapezoid as the figure that most fully encapsulates in symbolic form the hidden meaning of the law that bears its name. That law of the trapezoid is the one that says the obtuse angles are magically harmful to those unaware. Holy crap. They're using angles against us now. What are they doing? How are they going to do that? How are they going to do it? Nobody's going to know. How are they going to know? So then they have a diagram of this symbol of theirs, the trapezoid with the pentagram star inside of it. And it talks about how each corner and each angle represents one of these gods of the Lovecraftian whatever. And it talks about their origin in Lovecraft stories, The Haunter of the Dark, The Dreams and the Witch, and all these other books that I have not read because I have a hard time reading H.P. Lovecraft. Sometimes I just give it up. And then they talk about the speech they use as they traverse symbolically this symbol in the rituals. And it talks about, it says, the fragments of the speech of the great old ones found in the case of Charles Dexter Ward and the Call of Cthulhu, H.P. Lovecraft stories, were expanded by Akino into a magical language, somewhat reminiscent of Enochian. Enochian language, of course, the language of the angels, supposedly given to Adam in the Garden of Eden by the serpent, by the devil himself, which is what John Dee and Edward Kelly, when they were channeling information from the alien gods, they wrote down the Enochian language. There's an actual literal language, a table of characters for the Enochian language, and that is what Aleister Crowley based his Amalantra workings, which was the ritual he used to channel Lamb, the first gray alien depicted, It's all connected here, right? Oh, speaking of which, my neighbor told me he saw a UFO last night right outside my house. I shit you not. I couldn't believe it. And I believe him, too. I don't think he's making it up. He told me the whole story. That sounded legit as hell. Scary, scary, wary. But anyway, they talk about the Cthulhu Ugothic alien language. It's a magical language just like Enochian. And Michael Aquino, you know, elaborated upon it or whatever. Okay? Now, listen to this. They talk about all the different angles, and they say this interesting stuff. They're talking about a unifying concept for the first angle is chaos. This is a state of unity, but which holds all possibilities and polarities. Okay? So the association of chaos with the first angle might suggest randomness or destructiveness, though it was originally intended to refer to the emergent properties of complex dynamic systems, blase, blase, blah. Order out of chaos. That's where this stuff comes into play. You need to shake things up so you can settle them and rearrange them in the order in which you want. Very strange stuff. Now, let's see here. The approach, okay, here, oh boy, I got to find the section. Hold on a second here. Says here, to approach the nine angles as a magical system, it is necessary to introduce the notions of curved time and angular time. What are they talking about? Well, they're going to tell you. It says, in the cosmology of Plato, best exemplified in his dialogue Timaeus, the shape of the cosmos itself manifests as a sphere. The components of the cosmos form from the unmanifest void in the proportions of a Pythagorean musical scale, further tying this cosmology to notions of the music or harmony of the spheres. The perfection of the sphere arises from all points on its surface being the same distance from the center. It averages the shape of the other Platonic solids. Snooze, snooze, bore, bore. What is he talking about? Talking about Plato and this harmony of the spheres, and this goes into the sacred geometry stuff. The sphere, of course, has all points equidistant to the center, whereas Platonic solids are built around angles. Now, who cares about any of that? Because here's the thing. Dr. Dre was supposed to make an album at one time based upon this idea. Yes, indeed. Dr. Drizzy. Dr. Dre. And he never did it. I don't know why. He never told me. But he was supposed to make an album based upon the language of the planets. Called, I think it was called The Harmony of the Spheres. I could be wrong. But it talks about all this weird stuff, right? Then we get into chapter 2. Moving right along. Historical antecedents. Sounds boring already, doesn't it? It says here... Oh, what's the section here? I mean, it's very tough to read. It talks about... In a more modern example, yet still rooted in archaic cosmology and folklore, the earliest 20th century Austrian occultist Guido von Liszt saw the runes as part of a threefold formula. Entstehen, sein, verhegegen. Oh boy, a bunch of German words I don't know. The translations are arising, being, passing away to a new arising. Guido von Liszt's formula emphasizes the ideal of eternal cyclical evolution as applied in both an organic sense of life, death, and rebirth, and a cosmological sense that can be reflected in an individual's own development. Heavy-duty stuff. And it goes on to talk about how the formulas reflect the number three in cycles. You'll hear the number three in a lot of truth or breakdowns of various symbolism and stuff. But the idea of evolving man, the revolution of mankind through transhumanism, is evident here. Guido von Liszt, of course, one of the Nazis? One of the guys that influenced Hitler? Influenced Heinrich Himmler, maybe? And they're talking about, like, sort of people that influenced all this stuff, right? In fact, they even talk about Peter Lavenda for a little bit in here, in this book. Talking about the Scarlet Woman and tantric sex magic and how it's all connected to Lovecraft and Crowley and all this wild stuff. Then they talk more about Pythagoras. talks about how he has been profoundly influential on Western philosophy in the last 2,500 years. The philosophy, based primarily on the symbolism behind numbers, is a means of comprehending the universe and the magician's place within it. Provides a significant basis for the original conception of the ceremony of the nine angles. The idea of the fundamentally mathematical nature of the cosmos is further developed by the most important figure in the development of Western philosophy, Plato. So there you go. More proof that numerology is, and symbolism plays a role behind the numbers and this idea of interacting with nature and the universe and how the magician thinks they can control, you know, nature and the universe, more or less, right? Then, let's see. And then they talk about a bunch of the first 10 numbers and what they mean. This one was interesting, though. The pentad, number 5 here. To the Pythagoreans, the five-pointed pentagram was a sacred symbol of life and vitality and a gateway to otherwise inaccessible realms of awareness beyond the normal senses. Indeed, the pentagram was the secret sign of the brotherhood. The pentagram, both in its symbolism and its encoding of the golden ratio, forms an integral part of the information in Chapter 4. So there you go, the meaning of the pentagram to these folks. It's a gateway to inaccessible realms of awareness beyond the normal senses and a secret sign of the brotherhood. Pretty crazy, right? Then they show some symbolism of like this, the pyramid of dots, talking about these pagan German, Austrian, pre-Nazi folks, Guido von List, von Liebenfels, how they combine the personal interpretation of the runes and claims of an ancient family tradition, synthesized and taught this unique version of the original Germanic religion. And, you know, we talk about all this, and it has to do with the ideas William Ramsey was talking about, how the Atomwaffen, the Nazis, are tied into this satanic stuff. It's so bizarre, isn't it? But in the book here, it says that here we go. Many of the writings contain Wilgut's teachings in his own words only survive as memos to Himmler, Heinrich Himmler, both indirectly through Guido von List and perhaps directly, although he never explicitly acknowledges this as a source. Some of Wilgut's writings show the influence of the works of Madame Blavatsky and they talk about the so-called root races. So there's like these nine commandments. These mystics in Germany, they were teaching Heinrich Himmler and Guido von List all these ideas of Helena Blavatsky's theosophy fused in with numerology from Pythagoras. And the author is saying that we need to understand the nine commandments because these would fit into the nine angles of Michael Aquino with the same Pythagorean influence. So crazy, right? So crazy. And it talks about Gott, G-O-T, and about how Gott is beyond the concepts of good and evil, which carries the seven epochs of human history, which is curious because in Matrix, the film The Matrix, there's seven cycles in the storyline. And that's also what Blavatsky spoke about. She talked about seven cycles, seven epochs. Wasn't that a character in The Matrix 1? Not Tupac. What was his name? Pac. I think it was just Pac. I don't know. I could be wrong. You know what I'm saying. I'm going to do a film analysis of The Matrix movies here real soon. And then, okay, it talks about the Pythagorean influence on the commandments. And then that Wilgut considers nine to be both the end of one cycle of creation and the start of a new one. The seat of recreation role is fulfilled by 10 in the Pythagorean decad as the bridge between the Ennead and the Monad. To Wilgut, the bridge is contained within 9 itself. This also creates this correspondence to the geometrical and symbolic function of the ninth angle, whose central mystery is that of both the end and the beginning. So you've got that evolution, constant, evolving sort of thing, 9 being the bridge for the new cycle of creation, just like, what does that sound like? Sounds like 9-11. Nine bridges to the decad, or the 10. 10 being perfected like God with the 10 Sephirots on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And shout out Freeman Fly, said that 9 goes to 11 and, you know, to the magician, skipping God, blasphemy. In the Pythagorean arithmology, the pentad is the symbol of man as capable of developing his individual intelligence and spirit to God levels, such as initiated person would, superior understanding of blah, blah, blah. And again, over and over, Pythagoras, the first secret society, he was saying that knowledge will allow man to become God. That's what they want. That's the end game for these folks, right? They talk about, oh boy, they talk a little bit more about the Enochian keys, okay? It says, the other inspiration that the Enochian keys provided to Anton LaVey's magical terminology were the references to angles. Angles in Enochian magic are another name for the quadrants of the table that are used in conjunction with the invocations and with sigil construction. By tracing out the letters, you know what a sigil is, right? Trace the letter out, remove the vowels, shuffle them around. Only the magician knows what they mean. As with the recasting of the angelic rendering of Enochian into more satanic terms, LaVey also made connections between these strange angles illuminated in the text with his own theories of the law of the trapezoid. And this is the origin. This is the meaning of the term angles from the order of the nine angles. They're saying they derived it from the Enochian language, the alien language, which he highlights saying it's not really the actual language, but more of a reference table, which is what Aquino used to create this Lovecraft language of Ugothic used in the rituals. And the angles refers to the quadrants of the Enochian table for that language. Clear as mud, does that make sense? No, it doesn't. It's fine. You know what? Unless you're planning on practicing this, you just got to get the rough idea. Order of nine angles, bad. That's the idea. Chapter 3. At least that's what I think. Chapter 3, angular magic within the Church of Satan and the Temple of Set. Despite others' attempts to identify a certain number with Satan, it will be known that 9 is his number. 9 is the number of the ego, for it always returns to itself. And that's that 9 is the end and the beginning talk. No matter what is done through the most complex multiplication of 9 by any other number, in the final equation, 9 alone will stand forth. And then it goes through a bunch of, you know, nerd stuff with math. Like 9, okay, so like 9 times 3 is 27, right? 2 plus 7 equals 9. 9 times 123 is 1107. 1 plus 1 plus 7 is 9. This is what gets you into that numerology, gematria stuff. And then it talks about why they do the rituals the way they do. It talks about the psychodrama, a reflective ritual designed to illustrate to the participants imagery and action that will help break down specific barriers of their understanding. They talk about an example in George Orwell's 1984 where the interaction between O'Brien and Winston Smith in The Ministry of Love have all the hallmarks of a psychodrama. O'Brien creates situations for Smith that challenge him to confront dearly held notions about the nature of himself and reality. I'm sorry, society. And was that not what Klaus Schwab said was going to happen with the Great Reset stuff? He said, with the COVID thing, it was going to cause a mass change. Everyone is forced to self-analyze and change their values. And that's exactly what happened. Old Klaus Schwab over there hanging out with the Order of Nine Angles, maybe. I don't know. And it's saying that these psychodrama rituals, there you can be broken down into two categories. There's the operative one where you're creating a change, or an illustrative reflexive one meant to inspire the magician. Then they talk about the Black Mass. You know what that is, right? It's the inversion of the Catholic Mass. And you see this play out in the film and the mainstream media when they show us things that are supposed to change our view of organized religion. And does it work, right? You see all these Catholic priests touching the kids. You see it over and over, and you're like, well, geez, what's going on with these people? And the Black Mass is supposed to lay bare the contradictions, the absurdity of a particular attitude or belief system. Doesn't have to be religious. It's kind of like how we had those emails about pizza, you know, and we still haven't figured out what they mean. But they tie it in with the absurdity of QAnon that thinks JFK Jr. is coming back to life at Dealey Plaza. And they're like, see? See how absurd this is? It's a black mass of conspiracy theories. Pretty crazy. Then it goes through a bunch of different... It talks about psychoanalysts, Wilhelm Reich, concerning the build-up, blockage, and release of sexual energy for sexy time as being a part of the mechanism of the ritual. Romance explosion. I told you it'd be a Borat joke. There's one. But they use sex magic and sex energy as a tool. Okay? And they talk about how the celebrant, the person participating in that ritual, should be male because he literally seeds the future through the magical orgasm, through romance explosion, through the ritual. And that's what Wilhelm Reich was talking about with all the sex energy and sex magic. Then there's a section, they're talking about Lovecraftian ideas and magic. And it talks about how Lovecraft's fiction had esoteric purposes and his own views on magic and the supernatural world, how they play together, and how it was kind of ironic because he was a materialist and he rejected the idea of magic as a means of affecting the objective universe. Which is very strange, right? Who would have thought that his works would later influence all these magicians? They're talking about Harry Houdini, talking about disdain for Aleister Crowley, who was the most well-known self-identified magician during Lovecraft's lifetime. Yeah, so anyway, talk a little bit about Lovecraft. So it's ironic that he didn't even believe in the magic he was always talking about. Then they talk about the Dunwich Horror and the Yog-Sothoth in the stories of Lovecraft. It talks about all these ideas of gates opening up. And the reason they do it, they say opening gates needs to be done at a great cost in order to gain access to knowledge, which ties us into the 9/11 talk, right? That's why they open the gates, possibly. Open up the gate, lift the veil of ISIS. We talked about it in the 9/11 episodes. Check them out for more. Chapter 4, The Foundations of Geometry and Magical Practice. And this is where things start getting real nerdy. Interest is rapidly being lost. Because they go into like real in-depth stuff. It talks about metaphors symbolically evoking sensations and associations. And at one level or another, form the basis for virtually all ritual and magical behavior. So to apply this idea to 9/11 to make sense of it, 9/11 was the metaphor with the twin towers as the twin pillars. That was the metaphor. And the magic is based on metaphor. They even talk about, and then they talk about how to make metaphors into reality. They talk a little bit about 2001 A Space Odyssey. The teacher as gardener is the idea of the metaphor, where the intelligent beings cultivate consciousness emerged on the planets they have explored. They're the farmers. You got to plant the seed with your finger of consciousness. And then it talks about the metaphor of Freemasonry is the construction of Solomon's temple. And that's why they always talk about like rebuilding the temple. It's a metaphor for creating a new consciousness of mankind. Let's see what else here. What else is interesting to you? The G in Freemasonry, they say it stands for Golden Dawn or Geometry. That's what LeVay said. Interesting. I always thought it meant Grand Creator, but no one really knows. LeVay thought it meant Golden Dawn or Geometry. And Freemasonry is like magic, is what they're saying. You have to experience something. You have to experience the ritual to have mastery over it. It's like riding a bike You could read all about it, study every element of it. None of it matters. You just got to get on the bike and ride. I thought it was very interesting. And then talk about the origins of geometry and Plato. We already talked about that, though, right? Kind of boring stuff. Then they talk about more about ancient Egypt and more geometry concepts. I mean, if you're really into geometry, this might be a good book for you. Then the pentagram, the golden ratio. And I find all this interesting to hear these different interpretations of the pentagram. It says the pentagram is a very ancient symbol with documented occurrences with and without an enclosing circle. As early as 3500 BC, all the angles and subdivisions of lines within a pentagram are precisely keyed to phi, even though its use as a symbol predates the geometric understanding that forever coupled it to the golden ratio. The discovery only enhanced the already intuitive significance associated with the pentagram and its closely related figure, the pentagon. The pentagram was used, always in verse, as a symbol and sign of recognition by Pythagoreans. Because you remember earlier they said the pentagram was the secret brotherhood symbol. All right. It's all about this sacred knowledge of geometry. Chapter 5, A Theory of Magic. And it talks about the historical theories of magic. The difference between sympathetic theory and semiotic theory. I don't know. Do you care this much? It's pretty crazy. So they're saying that order of nine angles is based upon semiotic theory, where the magician utilizes signs and symbols as part of a communication process with the phenomena she wishes to understand or affect, and assigns meaning to the phenomenon that became known to her. Very interesting. Signs and symbols, friends. Right here, that's the Illuminate confirm. They're telling you right here. The use of symbol systems, mechanisms of encoding, communicating, and decoding is how magic functions. I feel like that's a good place to end. I feel like it's a good place to conclude this book because, you know, the rest is kind of like splitting hairs. And unless you're really into this ritual magic stuff, you know, it's getting deep, deep in the weeds. I'm going to tell you a couple little things, then we're going to wrap up. The mechanics of ritual magic. They use Wizard of Oz as an example of a magician using the ruby slippers to facilitate desire. And she finds out by the end of the film, the power to go home was always inside of her. Right? She had the power of the mind. And that's what this whole group is apparently about, according to them. Connecting the practitioner of magic to the traditions that have come long before. And the author is arguing that the magician needs to study the history of magic to know the context of what they're doing. Which is why Crowley was reading Shakespeare, which is your Francis Bacon guy, right? That's why LeVay was using skulls to make an environment to do magic, because this was set up through oral tradition and historically it goes back a long way. I'm trying to see what else is of interest to you here. They go through different symbolisms, the sign of the X and how it's tied to runes. We talked about the sign of X as the mark of the beast. But the celebrant during the ceremony of the nine angles stands at the altar with clenched fist and arms crossed left over right. It says this is the same sign as the rune Gibo, the gift whose mystery demands exchanges between equals, further affirming the participants' kinship with the outer gods, with the understanding granted to them, which requires reciprocation. So, very similar to that idea of the mark of the beast. Then they talk about practicing sigil magic. You know, and this is, you know, if you're very much into this stuff, you'd probably love it. But to conclude, last thought, because they talk about sigil magic a bunch. They talk about how the sigils need to be properly implanted into the subconscious as part of creating the necessary space between action and the ability of the sigil to continue to work below the level of conscious thought. And that's what this is all about. That's what, when we talk about, for all these years, we talk about symbolism, rituals and Super Bowl music videos, all this stuff. It's being employed by satanic Nazi psychopaths. Now, the book, which has, you know, Michael Aquino involved, Stephen Flowers involved, who are very much into this left-hand path talk, it doesn't talk about the human sacrifice elements that William Ramsey talked about. Because why would they? Why would they put that in the mass, you know, Barnes & Noble shelves? They can't. It's obviously very unappealing to talk about sacrificing people. But William Ramsey did a pretty good job of connecting those dots. But how would I know? How would I know what the truth is? I don't know. But that's everything we talked about for so many years. About the symbolism, the sigils, working on the subconscious. And that there are, in fact, architects of this world trying to influence you through symbols and sigils. That's what Kanye West was talking about before he went crazy, right? I think he might know. He might know the truth. So there you go. That's the whole book. I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for being a supporter on wherever you're at. You could be on the Patreon. You could be on the Rockfin. You could be on the VIP section. I appreciate your support. I appreciate you listening. Not being one of those free feed losers. 2022 is going to be the year of no more free feed losing. So I appreciate your support. And I joke, of course. You can be a free feed loser. You know what? If it helps you pay your bills off sooner, be a free feed loser. Because you're a free feed winner then. All right, thanks for your support. Till next time, stay woke.